Action, all of Brooklyn, New York.
He's a three-time world heavyweight champion who ruled by intimidation.
Beat me if you can. Survive if I let you.
Taz would pick up guys nearly twice his size and drop them on their heads.
He is a human suplex machine.
Now he's bringing his no-nonsense New York swagger to the podcast world. This is Taz.
The mood is about to change.
The Human Podcast Machine.
You're not afraid of a little competition, are you?
Hey, gang, what's going on? This is he, Taz, the Human Podcast Machine, and I want to say hello and hope everybody's well. Thank you all for downloading this episode of HPM and or subscribing. I do appreciate it. Appreciate all the support you guys and love you guys have been giving the podcast. So very much appreciate it. Thank you. Can't thank you enough. Without you guys, it don't happen. And, you know, you hear that a lot, and that's the truth. You hear a lot of different podcasters say it. I know in my instance, it's definitely, in my situation, I should say, it's definitely the truth. So thank you. In this episode here, dropped it a little early, earlier than normal, but we're going to have the Samoan Submission Machine, Samoa Joe, will be the guest on here, and he will talk about his recent, of not coming to terms with TNA Wrestling, his departure from TNA Wrestling. So that'll be a discussion that Joe and I will have, and we're just going to have after that point, just a conversation. It's just like you're kind of eavesdropping in our conversation. That's my deal, guys. You know, I don't sit out here with nuts and bolts interviews, and that's not what I'm about. I'm about having a conversation with guys and or gals and from the biz or whatever, and just it's almost as if you guys are eavesdropping in on people from behind the scenes in the business type gimmick. That's kind of my deal. So Samoa Joe will be on here and give some insight to what the heck's going on, what his goals are, possibly his future. As you know, everybody knows that he's got some dates set up with Ring of Honor. So we'll discuss that. Joe's going to give some of his opinions, which is pretty funny, about ECW and about what he thinks of some of the original ECW guys like myself or Tommy Dreamer. And Bully Ray, Sabu, Van Damme, and rest of the guys. It's pretty funny, I got to tell you. It's pretty good. And then also in this episode, there's going to be a Taz tale. At the end, after the Samoa Joe interview is done, the Samoa Joe interview is more of a two-parter. And after the Samoa Joe interview is done, there will be a Taz tale that basically I go over the push that should have been. That push that was supposed to be, I should say. That's what it should be called in the WWE for yours truly. So I will talk about that in Taz Tales. And other thing that's topical right now, is about Rey Mysterio. I got to say, I was very surprised to hear that about Rey Mysterio being done with the WWE. Rey's had an amazing career in general, and I got a feeling his career is far from over. But Rey's had a great career everywhere he's been, from WCW, his short stint in ECW, and of course the WWF into the WWE. Just an amazing run for Rey. I was a little surprised. I thought Rey would be there, almost to the end, even though it's been a lot of scuttlebutt for the past few months about Lucha Underground and him, close to the friendship with Conan and whatnot, and just the connection of Lucha Underground and what Rey Mysterio is and where he's from, and as a luchador and all, and his success he could have potentially at a Lucha Underground. So we'll see if that comes forward, which I assume it will, but who knows. There's a couple things I want to talk about, though, about Rey. Again, I am surprised because he's had, like I said, so much of a push in a great way and well-deserved for Rey, and done great with the WWE. And I think the WWE did an amazing job promoting and pushing him for all these years the way he did. And Rey was one of just another guy, not the only, but just another guy who took the whole, well, if you're not a gigantic 6'6" guy, you're not going to get pushed in the WWE and make money. Rey proved everybody wrong on that. Rey kicked ass and took names in the WWE and did amazing. And I haven't talked talked to Rain a long time, but I always considered him a great guy, a great friend. When my son was little, I remember going to shows, bringing my son to some of the Nassau Coliseum shows when he was little, like, 8, 9 years old, and Ray would just take the hood off his face, his own face, after he just wrestled, a mask, and just give it to my kid. And just hooked him up with stuff all the time. I mean, Ray is just one of the, just a good-hearted guy, a great person. I miss Ray. I wish I could have stayed in touch with him. But sometimes when guys leave the WWE and you're still in the WWE, it's almost like you're in the WWE, you're in an island with just the WWE guys on that island. Like, no one else is around that island. It's hard to explain. One day I will here on HPM. I'll explain it. Anyway, so he is not with the WWE no more. Now, a couple things with Ray. I also was a little bit, taken aback that WWE just put out, a statement that just said, and I'm paraphrasing, but it was a simple statement of Rey Mysterio is no longer under contract to the WWE, something to that extent. A one-sentence, cold, hard news bulletin. Boom, done. There's our statement. We're moving on. That's kind of was the attitude of them. I was a little surprised at that. I understand business is business. This guy's had an amazing career there. I understand things happen. Let me delve into that a little bit. When I say business is business, I've been through contract negotiations. I've been through headbutting with companies with contracts, many times. And sometimes when things don't come to terms, there's kind of disdain on each side, heat on each side. The company's maybe mad at you, you're maybe mad at the company. And now with the power of social media, we go public with things. Companies do, talent does, not just in wrestling. This is in pro sports, acting. We know as we're trolling, all of us, we're trolling social media looking for the latest news bulletin or breaking news and yada yada. So no matter if it's in entertainment or society and culture, whatever it's in, real life, the business world. So it's the same with wrestling, right? And so I just feel like, the WWE was kind of cold in their statement saying that he's just not on the contract no more and he's gone. After this run, this whole success, everything he's done in the company, the amount of money, the millions the company's made and Ray has made, how do you not just put a better statement out? But again, what I'm saying is business. What happens is I don't know this. This is just my speculation. So please don't quote me wrongly here. I'm just giving you my speculation and my opinion. I mean, what happens a lot of times is it sounds to me, just reading between the lines, and this happens a lot, where they could not, and this is not news breaking, but they couldn't come to terms with Ray, obviously. And maybe they felt Ray was asking for too much. Maybe Ray felt they wasn't getting offered enough. Who knows? Maybe he wanted out. They didn't want him out and all this kind of jazz. That could be too. But I wish that we were able to put that stuff aside, show the right face publicly, do the right thing for the wrestling fans, and acknowledge this guy, Rey Mysterio, his amazing accomplishments, what he's done, any opportunity we have given him, let's say if I'm the WWE I'm speaking as, I think you can't just blow that off. I just think that's just to your WWE universe, I think you got to be a little bit, you got to give a little bit more of a positive statement. I really do. I don't care if it's TNA, Ring of Honor. I'm not saying those guys have done that. Whoever, someone leaves a company who has a great legacy, I think you got to put that out there. That's your obligation as a company. And I also think the talent on the other end should say, hey, thank you. I mean, if you look as of recent, speaking of Samoa Joe's in this episode, I mean, that was done between Samoa Joe and TNA Wrestling. Joe put out a tweet thanking the company. The company put out a tweet thanking Joe. I mean, and everybody moves on. No problem. That's just right business. And I'm saying WWE usually, they do right business. I don't know, man. I mean, this thing must have got a little heated behind the scenes. Who knows? I know there was some rumors that Ray wanted out and they wouldn't let him out. I got to tell you, I'm going to throw a flag on that. I, in my opinion, I think that I don't know how true that is. Not just Ray, but anyone. I mean, the WWE, just like any other company, not just wrestling, any other company in the world, guys, look at it as a relationship. If you want out, let's say you're a guy and you're with some girl, and you're with this girl for 6 months. You don't want to be with this girl no more. And you tell her, I want out. That's it. I want to break up with you. I'm sorry. I know I broke your heart, whatever. that girl, 9 out of 10 times, she's going to be upset, obviously. She's going to try and convince you to stay. But at the end of the day, she's not going to want you to be with her, if she's got a brain. She's not going to want you to be with her if you don't want to be with her. And it's the flip side. If it's a chick that's some guy, you know what I mean? Like, you got to want to be there. And I know the WWE, from Vince McMahon down, the pride in that company. If you don't want to be there, no problem. Here's your unconditional release. You're out. You know, I again, I'm not speaking for, I'm not knocking Ray, I'm not knocking anybody. I'm just saying that was what I've always felt it was there. And I think in any company, I know in ECW it was like that. You know, I mean, when I left ECW and I told Paul, I'm leaving, I got to go. You know, he didn't want me to leave, but he didn't beg me. He was like, no problem. You know, I mean, because you got to have your pride. And WWE has not succeeded and flourished this many years without having that type of pride. So I don't know, man. I don't know if I believe the fact that they, and I'm paraphrasing, kind of, that they forced, WWE forced Ray to stay in a company or whatever. Or they wouldn't let him leave. And it's not like that, man. Unless things have changed there, which I don't think it has. From what I heard, it hasn't. You want out, you know, you can get out. Now, you can get out, but, and there's a big but, and I think there's a but in this situation. Everybody's like, well, Ray's going to end up going to Lucha Underground and do all this stuff and everything with Conan, and I think that'll happen eventually. I think it'll be great. I think Ray could end up anywhere he wants. Ray's that good. Ray could be in Ring of Honor. Ray could be in TNA. Ray can go to Japan. This guy keeps himself in great shape. His body's in good shape. He's got banged up a little bit like most of us, but he's still rocking and rolling. He looks great. And from right here, is, you know, I understand his work is still very crisp. And the last I've seen him on TV. So I think that this guy can go to Japan, Ring of Honor, TNA, Lucha Underground. He can go anywhere he wants. You know, really, I mean, depending as long as they come to terms on money, this guy can go any place he wants. From an in-ring talent ability, he's obviously a big enough superstar. There's no doubt about that. But, and he's a box office attraction. But I'm telling you, man, like, I don't think he's going anywhere anytime soon. Because there's a little something called a non-compete. So I'm pretty sure he's got one of those. We all have. So we've all been through that with WWE, where you're on a non-compete, man, and you got to just chill for whatever that is. They fluctuate. Could be 60 days, could be 90 days, could be 30 days, could be 45 days. Everybody's got different language in their contract. So, I mean, some guys, I'm sure it happens, they don't have a non-compete. I would be shocked if Ray does not have a non-compete. That would shock me. I'm not a lawyer. I'm not his attorney. I'm not his agent. Haven't spoke to the guy in years. But I'm just telling you, from my experience, I'm pretty sure there's usually there's non-competes, and especially a talent to the level of a Ray Mysterio. So, again, my speculation, for Ray, I hope I'm wrong, and he can just go to Lucha Underground tomorrow, or go to Ring of Honor tomorrow, or go to TNA tomorrow, or go to wherever, New Japan, or go wherever it is that Ray, and it's good for Ray and his family. God bless him, and I only wish Ray the best, and I look forward to bumping into him one day again soon, because I truly love the guy. I really mean that, and I just think he's, I'd love to say he's underrated, but he's not. He's highly rated, and rightfully so. So it'll be interesting, exciting time, not just to see where my guest in this episode, Samoa Joe, ends up, but to see where Rey Mysterio ends up. So that's what's interesting. You know, then we just saw that recently with Alberto Del Rio and Alberto Del Rio, where we didn't know where he was going to end up, and he ended up in Ring of Honor first, then he goes to Lucha Underground. So when guys leave, and you know what I mean? So it's kind of interesting to see, and we'll discuss that a little bit with Joe, too, where that mystique kind of is coming back, because there's more competition now. There's more companies for guys to work for. It's not a one or two wrestling company show anymore. There's a little bit more places to work. You know, it's not the only game in town is not TNA. The only game in town is not WWE. It's not like that anymore, guys. So, which is great for wrestling fans. And frankly, it's great for people who earn a paycheck from the wrestling business, like yours truly. So, anyway, enough of that long-winded open. We're going to get to the Samoa Joe interview right after this break. Stay tuned. Samoa Joe coming at you. So let me ask you a question. You think we do this show for free, right? It's just like for free because you downloaded it. Well, it's time to pay the bills. Relax.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
All right, we are back right here on the Human Podcast Machine. As I said, the Samoan Submission Machine is here, and yes, he is. Joe, what's going on, bro? How you doing, baby?
I'm doing good. I'm doing good. How about yourself, Dad?
Good, bud. Good, good. So listen, man, obviously, you know, everyone wants to know what's going on with Samoa Joe. For those that don't know, you know, you and TNA could not come to terms. You guys parted ways. And, recently, so, and you really haven't done that much chatter or talk about it. Don't latest I've heard on you is that you're going to do some events for Ring of Honor, which is awesome, going back to your roots for the most part. And I know you're going to talk about that a little bit, too. But maybe you could just bring us through any way of describing to your fans and fans of my show, like, what went on, what's going on, in any way you want to do it. The floor's yours.
It just kind of came down to, it was a variety of reasons. And I can't really say it was one or two things in particular. You know, it was kind of a compounding of different reasons for me personally, professionally, and in my dealings with TNA. I've had a great business relationship with TNA for 9 years. And I look fondly back on that. But this latest contract, kind of going back and forth and seeing, where the company was and where I was in my life and kind of, you know, realizing, what some of the fans, especially, fans of mine, fans of wrestling in general, kind of had out there. You know, I took a lot of factors into account and we decided to part ways.
Well, I mean, and I think a lot of people were surprised on that. I know I was surprised. A lot of people that work for TNA were surprised. A lot of people outside of TNA were surprised. And I think because you had such a great career there and the amount of championships you've held in TNA, but for those that are just TNA fans, I don't think they realize, how much you accomplished before even going to TNA years ago, and what you did in Ring of Honor and prior, speaking of Ring of Honor, now that you're kind of, and it was an announcement made, I believe, by Ring of Honor that you're going to do some shows, some dates for them. So, I mean, that's got to be a great feeling, for you. So talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. Ring of Honor is, something that I take a great deal of pride in when it comes to my career. We faced some really rough times. We had some really great times there, and I'm proud to say that we myself, along with several other wrestlers, Daniel Bryan, the Punks,
right.
The Homicides, the Roddy Strong, the Aries. We built that company kind of from the ground up. Low key, another big part of it, in the initial stages.
Just think about those names you just said, including yourself. The amount of ability and credibility and showmanship and athleticism and intensity in those wrestlers you just named, from Low Key to CM Punk, Austin Aries, yourself. Just Homicide. God, man, that, to me, as a guy from the generation before your generation, it gives me goosebumps because I remember my generation of the guys that were hyped for, and rightfully so, and kind of had grassroots like the names you just mentioned. It was, I just wanted to point that out. It was very cool to hear you say that.
Yeah, I said it was a real special time, and it was a real meeting of a lot of tremendous young talent that kind of all ended up in the same place and working towards the same goal. And we did some really fantastic things. And I'm looking forward to going back and reigniting the fire down there and getting things going again. They have a new crop of really great young talent down there and guys who are, real hungry and extremely skilled. And I'm looking forward to matching up with some of them.
Yeah, the business model of Ring of Honor, I've always been a fan of it. You and I have talked off air about it in the past, about both of our loves for Japan, for pro wrestling in Japan, and how they've done a great job of selling the sport end, meaning like New Japan, for example, sport end of professional wrestling. And I think Ring of Honor, especially during your time there, really did a great job with doing, selling the sport end of pro wrestling.
Well, and I think it was a product of the time because, right around that era of when we were all coming up, ECW was kind of the only alternative outside of the two big major companies. And, you know, when that was gone, there was this real big void kind of left in the Northeast. And basically across the state, you know, of fans who were kind of, they loved a more, I guess, you know, sports style of wrestling. And because of that, you had a lot of guys who kind of made their bones overseas and had trained over there in the dojos over there and had brought back kind of that kind of sport mindset to their wrestling. And, you know, it all ended up in Ring of Honor. And, I mean, it worked out. Two other major guys got to mention, because they'll kill me, is, you know, AJ and Chris Daniels also, I mean, majorly instrumental.
Oh, God, yeah. My bad, too. Yeah. Definitely. You know, Chris Daniels would, he would yell at you so much you'd get a cauliflower ear.
Yeah, and I got to travel in a car with him soon.
Oh, ridiculous. You know, bless your heart. Bless your heart. And I love Daniels. I'm joking. He's just a maniac. He's just insane. but in a good way, you know what I mean? Like, very passionate. So obviously the chatter about you the past couple of weeks, dude, it's like you're the hot free agent. You know what I mean? And it's like, man, there's so much different speculation on what any different wrestling promotions can do with a Samoa Joe right now, you know, which I think is so friggin' cool for a guy like you with your legacy already that is built and that you're still, you know, just whooping ass in the ring. And I mean, I don't want to put you on the spot and say, where do you see yourself fitting best? Because I know I wouldn't want anyone to ask me that. I could never ask a fellow wrestler that. But I got to say, I mean, if you look at like an NXT, for example, if you look at like a WWE, I mean, on those cards, I mean, there are different guys, especially in WWE and main roster, there's so many different people they could pair you against. You know, it's a credit to you the way you've built your career, your persona, your character, and your style. You know, bringing that MMA style into pro wrestling, into your world for so many years, and now MMA is such a, you know, it's a household word now, you know, in sport. So it's just a great time for you, I would assume.
I mean, it is. I mean, I got to admit, I was a little bit surprised and overwhelmed by the response and the offers and the opportunities that have come up. And, you know, like, it's funny, a lot of people are, you know, trying to figure out, you know, where I'm heading to next, what I'm doing next. I mean, in all honesty, I'm really and truly just kind of sitting back and taking stock and trying to take it all in. I mean, it's been a whirlwind of a week and a half, I guess. And, I'm just trying to, you know, figure out what the best fit is for
But bro, isn't that what veterans do, right? I mean, you're not a rook, you know, I mean, that's what veterans do, right?
Yeah.
You sit back. Yeah. No, really.
I mean, I'm the situation and then make the best choice. And honestly, like, you know, wherever I do head, I want it to be a great fit for me, but I want it to be a great fit for the company that I'm working with. So I think those are the questions that we're trying to answer right now.
Yeah. And again, I think it's very exciting to see where, I mean, I'm going to be frank. I mean, I was watching Raw this past Monday and it was out of Nashville and I'm like, man. I wonder. I'm sitting there like a fan, like wondering if Joe's going to come out, like, you know. So, but you didn't. But that's cool. That's okay, because you want to have that mystique. You know, that's important, and it's almost like a lost. You know, I mean, I remember, like, not to be self-serving here, but like when I debuted in WWE and the way they debuted me and building me up on a video wall with the ba-boom, ba-boom. And before that, Chris Jericho, you know, the way they built him up with the countdown. And you remember during that time, the business was so hot. And you didn't know who was going to end up in WWF, who would end up in WCW, who would leave ECW, who would end up in ECW, who would leave WWF and go to ECW. You know what I mean? It was like, it was such a cool time, and you don't see that as much anymore. And I think with a cat like you, I think that's there again. You know, where is this guy going to end up? Will he end up back in New Japan? You know, will he end up back in Japan? Will he end up in the States? Will he just stay at Ring of Honor? You know, will he end up at NXT? Will he end up at WWE? Will he go back to TNA? You know, hey, maybe he ends up at Lucha Underground. Nobody knows where Samoa Joe's going to end up, which makes it very cool.
Well, yeah, I appreciate that, man. And, I think the situation's kind of a microcosm of the one that you described when you guys were switching companies and stuff. But, you know, like I said, man, I'm really looking forward to some of these opportunities that are coming up, and I'm really looking forward to, you know, entertaining fans and our new platform.
Yeah, man. And it's I know when I left ECW to go to WWF, it was a very, it was weird. You know, I felt excited. I felt re-energized as an in-ring wrestler. And I'm assuming you feel that same way because you're excited to bring your brand of pro wrestling to a new ring, a new genre. You know what I mean? A new fan base, I should say. You know, no disrespect to your fan base in TNA, but you have fan base worldwide. So, I mean, you know, so it's like I just think it's kind of cool that where, like when Del Rio left WWE, right? No one knew where he was going to end up, you know what I mean? And like, and I believe it was Ring of Honor was the first one to drop that he'd be doing spots for them, you know what I mean? So I think that's cool, but I think what yours is kind of building even more of a mystique, you know? It's very interesting.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like I said, I wish I could tell the world more. In a lot of ways, I wish I couldn't. But I mean, the decision's still out there, and like I said, we will try to find the best fit.
Well, I think you will, and we're gonna go to break. We're gonna come right back with some more of Samoa Joe. We'll be right back right here on the Human Podcast Machine with Joe.
Hey, the Human Podcast Machine will be right back.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Okay, welcome back. I am Taz. This is the Human Podcast Machine. Samoa Joe's my guest, and I got to tell you, bro, when I was going to debut in TNA back in the day, and I heard that they were going to align me with you, and I was stoked, man, because I was a fan of it. I never met you. I mean, people think that we go way back, you and I, and we actually don't, you know, no, we don't. We really don't. I mean, but I always was a fan of your style. I mean, and I always just respected it, and once I knew I was going to get a chance to work with you, I thought it was like the coolest thing. And I was saying to myself, I wonder if this guy probably doesn't want to work with me. I always wondered that, you know what I mean? It's weird.
I didn't, but
you prick. You're too much.
It was too open. I'm sorry.
I know. I threw you a softball.
You're gonna get hit out of the park. No, I was stoked. I was really excited because, you know, for whatever you can say. I mean, it's funny. I grew up on the West Coast. We did not have ECW. We didn't have a lot of ECW. But I knew who Taz was.
Yeah.
You know, in fact, you know, you've heard me all day, you know, I always hit him with the promo, your Easy Pass promo still pops to everybody that I know. It was the big, you don't think I can get from Brooklyn to Queens? Easy Pass, brother. That's the best stuff ever. So
bro, I don't know if anybody remembers that. Yeah, I know what you're talking about. Geez, do we have to explain that down the road? Wait, Seth, my producer's here. He's shaking. Say something, Seth. What's up?
I want to know what you're talking about.
Now we got to talk about the promo. This is Joe's interview. I did a promo.
Yeah, tell about the promo. It's a great promo.
You're going to have to help me, Joe, because I probably forgot most of it. I don't know who I was talking about.
Yeah, all I know, it was so long ago, but it was just, you know, Taz in typical threatening fashion. They say, you don't think I can get from Brooklyn to Queens? You don't think I can find you? And then he pulls up his Easy Pass.
I pulled out
Easy Pass, brother.
And that's when they were getting popular. And we were doing shows in Queens, and I don't know who I was talking. It was probably like Sabu or somebody. And I don't know, it was like the timing of the storyline. Like I couldn't get from Brooklyn to Queens in time to whoop somebody's ass. And I pulled out, you know, and again, I got Eve Heyman credit. It was his idea. Because it was the Easy Pass. And I go, and we did this promo at like 3 o'clock in the morning in Westchester in the guy's basement, you know, that used to shoot TV for us. I'm like, dude, Easy Pass. Because, yeah, it's the new thing, the Easy Pass thing. Use it. You have one? I go, yeah, I have one in my car. Go get it. I go out to the car. It's snowing, right? I got to get the Easy Pass. I go, Paul, are you friggin' serious? You want me to use this? He goes, yeah, Easy Pass. I got to get... Truth be told,
a year and a half later in a garage in somewhere in California, the three dudes sitting around a TV watching VHS of ECW, and that popped. I lost my skull. I'm like, he pulled out his Easy Pass. <It's> awesome.
So I'm glad I could be in. Department of Motor Vehicle and Taz was a big influence on you, Joe.
But you are. And it's funny because I think you feel the same way. When you got in the business, you started looking at guys that you really, really liked. I'm sure, you know, Bad News Allen, LaBelle, all those guys came to the forefront. And later on, it was funny afterwards. It's like, oh, he was a judo player. And it was just like, see, I knew. That's a good judo brother right there. You can't stop that. You know, judo guys, you know how they, you know,
oh, yeah,
they strut, they walk.
A little bit different. Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah. It's cool, but I was excited. I'm very protective, like I'm sure you are. We all are of our credibility, yeah. You know, because when you build credibility, And once I knew, I'm going to be new in TNA, and okay, wow, oh, you want to put me with Samoa Joe? Okay, well, I'm not worried about credibility now. I'm in good shape. You know what I mean? Like, I'm watching your promos. I'm doing my research on you, and I'm like, this guy don't need me to talk for him. You know, really? You know? But I think it was just the whole look of it. At the time we were doing the Main Event Mafia, if you remember, and and it kind of was a good fit. And speaking of your promos, I mean, your promos, bro. I mean, you have a vast knowledge of the English language. I mean, you have very good grammar. I have to give you that. You have a lot of vernacular, I think is the word they say.
I've read a few books.
All right.
I love doing promo work and stuff too, man. It's just, it's funny, man. It being a really hyper-aggressive, persona in the ring can also, to me, a gift and a curse. It's a gift in the sense that, you know, people know what to expect from you. It's a curse to the fact that sometimes it overshadows a lot of other things that you might be incapable of doing. So,
Let me ask you a question, bro. Would you want to, like, once you're done and you hang up the boots, as the cliche goes, and you're done, would you want to still be involved with the business behind the scenes, or you kind of would want to chill for a little while and be out of the business?
It's funny. I grew up in a show business family, you know, before I even stepped into foot in the ring.
Talk about your dad. I'm glad you brought that up because I know what you're going to say. Tell me about your dad.
Yeah, my pops, he started basically the Disney Terrace in Disneyland, Polynesian Chain around the world, worked for the Ice Capades, you know.
That's so cool.
He was a traveling spirit, man, and he just, he worked everywhere and did everything that could be done. And conversely, you know, he started a Polynesian dance troupe with my mom. And, you know, my parents didn't believe in daycare. You know, you raise your own kids. It's a Samoan thing, I guess.
Yep.
You know?
No, I hear you.
And so, you know, he put us all to work. So, you know, from about the age of 5 till, you know, 18, I mean, I worked full-time in my parents' show, which was working all the time and
that's
traveling.
Cool.
You know, I'd kind of been around the world twice before I'd ever stepped foot in a wrestling ring.
Damn.
And, you know, kind of coming from that background, you know, it's just it made me more than prepared for everything I'd see in the professional wrestling business. So, I mean, it works to my advantage.
I wonder if a lot of people know that about you, about your family's background, that being in the entertainment business God, you must have had a lot of fun as a kid being at Disneyland. California, Disneyland, right?
Disneyland, yeah.
So you must have had a blast. You were always at Disneyland. I had to be quick. Probably got worn out after a while, played out, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, we practically lived there. I mean, it was just, we'd go in the afternoons. We wouldn't go every day, but, you know, my dad, he'd work in the airlines in the morning, cut off, and he'd do 5 shows a night at Disney.
Wow.
And then he'd come back home and put us to bed, and on weekends, we would do our own shows. So, I mean, he was constantly working, constantly being gone. So, I mean, as far as being involved in pro wrestling and being in the business, yeah, I definitely see myself doing this. You know, in some capacity, or
I do too,
helping out in some way, just because it's kind of what I know and it's what I dig, and it's all I've done all my life.
Dude, no, I know, and like psychology, as you know, is such a massive part of the success of any wrestler, wrestling match, wrestling company. And you bring so much, not just credibility and experience and high level of success in big match. You drew money, and I've always felt like there's a difference between a good worker and a money worker, you know, and you're both, you know, but the key is the money worker, and you've drawn money, and that's a big deal, you know, and that's the type of guy that you want, like, you know, as an agent or as a lead agent or as a guy, as a coach, a trainer, talking to your younger talent coming up the pike, you know what I mean? And
when I put out my resume, like, I can just put your number down.
No.
And you can handle it.
No.
You're already doing a great job for me.
I'm done, bro. I'm not putting you over anymore. I'm done. So.
You're right. I'm a genius, Taz. Thank you for letting me know. Damn, see? I wasn't having an okay morning this morning. Now I'm having a great morning, man.
I'm a motivator, bro. I'm like the dude who does the church thing, whatever his name is. Who's the guy, Seth?
Joel Osteen?
Joel Osteen. I'm like Joel Osteen out here, but different. Yeah, so... From Red Hook.
Inspirational Quotes from Taz. That should be a new Twitter account. Inspirational Quotes from Taz. but then it's just really something sweet and inspirational, but then you end it with, you dick or you putz. Like, it'd be perfect.
You're killing me. Oh, man. Dude, I wish back in the day, I wish you were older. Meaning, you would have fit in, bro. I hate to be that ECW guy, but fuck it, I'm going to say it. You would have fit in perfectly in our locker room back in the day. I promise you that. You really would have.
It's funny, man. I ran into Heyman at a Comic-Con a couple years back.
Yeah.
And, he gave me kind of the same speech.
Really?
And then Tommy said I would have too, but then he followed up with, but I probably would have hated you, so I would have fired you.
Yeah, well, Tommy, yeah, well, you know, Tommy. Please, I can go on and on about Tommy. You know, Tommy, he's, yeah, Tommy invented ECW. Tommy fired everyone. I'm gonna bury Tommy. No, I love Tommy. I'm joking.
By the way, there's like a holy trinity of Tommy barriers. Like you, Bubba, and there's a couple other guys. I'm sure there's more than a trinity, but it's just like you bring up that name and immediately it goes to Barry Dreamer mode.
And you had the opportunity to get to know a lot of us. True hardcore ECW guys like myself and Bubba, you know, Bully and Dreamer, Van Damme. Dude, Sabu, I mean, are we really that bad? We got to be. I mean, what does a guy like you think of those guys?
Okay, you're not all insane if we were all Vikings. Like shoot legit Vikings like on a boat raiding villages, then you'd be totally at home and straight.
That's
but
crazy.
For like normal people, you're not adjusted at all.
I can't follow that. That's good stuff. A Viking. Oh man, I know. I always wonder what people think of because like I've been in, you know, like if me and Bubba are like when Bubba was working in TNA, we'd be like in an agent meeting or production meeting. I remember Hulk Hogan would sit there and be like. You guys are just too much. Like we were just, just constant attacking, ripping, but we'd have comebacks. We wouldn't just bitch about something. We'd say an alternative. You know what I mean? And Hulk would just laugh and just he thought it was the most entertaining thing in the world. You know, I don't know. I think it's just passionate.
You guys interacting is equivalent to the two dudes at the beginning of the Beat It video who grab hands and have a switchblade fight. Like it's just like immediately. It's never like, hey, how you doing? It's like it always starts with an insult, and then it starts with then there's a round of personal history being brought up and slandered, and then it's all right. Well, let's figure this thing out, and then you guys start working together. It's amazing.
Oh, bro, you're hysterical. You're killing me. It's hysterical, bro. That's great. I love it. Well, look, man, I loved having you on here. You got to come on again, bro. It's too much fun, bro. I don't know what else to say to you. It's just great. It's been great getting to know you, working with you, calling your matches as an announcer is just a joy. Huge fan of you, bro. Always will be. I love you to death, and just continue success.
I will. I'm gonna say as right as I can. And by the way, you know, hey, congratulations on all the success of the podcast. I know you're doing awesome. And I just want to warn everybody else doing a podcast out there, like he's coming for your throats. Like he acts all nicey-nicey, like just enough nice, but this guy back here on this, he's serious about this. So just, you know, he really wants your spot. He wants your advertisers. He wants, if this was syndicated, he'd want your markets. And he'd still
K-fabe, brother, K-fabe.
So I'm just saying. Just beware. That's on the come up. He's taking no prisoners.
On that note, Joe, I appreciate you, bro, and thanks for all the kind words, and thank you for coming on here, man. I really do. It was a great time talking to you. Hopefully everybody out there loves listening to our conversation and getting to know more about you.
Awesome, man. Appreciate it.
All right, bro. Talk to you soon, man.
All right, see you.
Break time!
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it. Boys and girls, pull up your stools. It is now time for Taz Tales.
I'm so flattered, and I constantly hear about how great of a debut you had at the Garden for the WWE against Kurt Angle. Yes, I agree, and I cherish that moment. No doubt about it. But the way that I was supposed to debut and what I was supposed to be in the WWE was a whole nother story, which never happened. And that's what this Taz Tale is about. Basically, when Vince Russo was writing all of WWE TV, years back, let's just call it WWF because that's what it was then, okay? So when Vince Russo was writing WWF's TV, he was the one who basically courted me and more or less courted me from ECW and recruited me. And then we ended up coming to terms with Vince McMahon, yada, yada, boom. So I had about 2 months of time to discuss with Russo creative ideas. Vince McMahon and Kevin Dunn, these guys, like, listen, you got to talk with Russo, come up with different concepts, please get in the game here a little bit and give some ideas of how you'd like to debut and what you want your role to be. Have some input. I said, awesome, I do appreciate that. So Russo and I had a natural friendship and chemistry, and we talked on the phone all the time. And at that time, Ken Shamrock was really rocking and rolling for WWF. And if you remember, he had the Lions Den. So the whole thing was going to be that I was stalking him and someone was going to run him over with a car or something. He was going to be out a while because he had to train for some legitimate fight. And I was going to take over his Lion's Den. So that's what Taz was supposed to come in as, a human suplex machine, the keeper now of the Lion's Den for all these months until Shamrock comes back from his mixed martial arts run. And then because he was contracted still to WWF, and he was going to come in and take the Lion's Den back from me and make it his own. And it was going to be a big buildup. That was really what was supposed to happen. It ends up being that Vince Russo, as history shows, well, he left WWE and went to WCW, and that itself is another story, and that freaked me out a little bit, because the guy who recruited me and the guy who really wanted me, the guy who was the lead writer, was a huge fan of my work and my character and had all these high hopes for me, that if Vince Russo does not go to WCW, I predict that I probably would have had a lot better in-ring success in the World Wrestling Federation. That, my friends, is a fact. So he had so much build up for me, which was leading to me and Stone Cold Steve Austin. That's where this was going. And it was a whole big thing where I was, some have dealt me as the Yankee version of Stone Cold Steve Austin, and we kind of came up in the business at the same time or from the same generation. Russo saw the connection and the parallels between me and Stone Cold. And a good way to pole vault me was going to be with this whole Lion's Den thing. And that's how I was supposed to come in. And I, quite frankly, I don't think I've ever told this story publicly. But I remember maybe a month before I debuted in the WWF. It was probably, November or December of 1999. I was doing a radio show as a guest with and Bill Apter was from Pro Wrestling Illustrated fame, historian of the business, a great guy, a guy who helped me a lot when I was younger in the business. Bill Apter was also a guest on this particular radio show. We were on together. And I remember Apter said to me, "Hey, Taz, I got to ask you. Everybody knows that, Russo, well, a lot of people know," he said, that Russo was a big part of the reason why he left ECW and came to the WWF. I go, "Yeah, that's true." He goes, "Well, what do you think about the fact that he just left WWF and now he's with WCW?" Silence. I'm like, "What?" "I didn't know that." He's like, "Yeah." I go, "Oh, man. Okay." I said, "Well, we'll see what happens." I started to no sell. I'm like, "Well, no, it'll be fine. I don't care. It's all good." Well, as soon as I hung up the phone with that radio show, I called Russo, and I couldn't get him on the phone. And I was getting hot. And then finally got him. And I'm like, "Dude, what is the story?" He's like, "Yeah, man, I couldn't take it anymore. It would wear me down. It was just too much writing. This new SmackDown show is going to take a lot up of my time. Yada, yada, yada." I'm like, "My man, you brought me in the company. You can't just leave. The guy who recruited you, Because I don't know, Vince McMahon loves you and all that. The agents love you. Don't worry. You're going to be grass." Okay. And I had a very good line of communication also with Vince McMahon. So, I remember a couple of days later, they were doing a Raw at the Nassau Coliseum. And I remember it very detailed. Unfortunately, it was the night that Draz was tragically injured in his match. And I was there that night. I wasn't performing. I was not technically, my debut was going to be a month from then or 2 months from then, wherever it was. But I went to the Nassau Coliseum because I lived near the Coliseum, and I wanted to talk to Vince McMahon before the show. I didn't want to bother him during the show about the fact that, hey, Russo just left. Am I okay here or what? You know, that type of thing. And Vince McMahon and Shane McMahon both sat me down and reassured me it's all good. We, you know, we brought you in here, not Vince Russo. You know, it was us. And it made me feel good about it. It said, stick around the show, go to the truck, talk to Kevin Dunn, meet Kevin Dunn, you know, all this kind of stuff. And it was... it was very cool to hear that, you know, from Vince McMahon. So, but yeah, that whole thing, if Russo doesn't leave, it's a whole different story, I think, for me.
Lee, what happened, like, right after that, your first few months of WWE, and how do you feel like it was going to go?
Well, I thought once I, you know, for those that are fans of my show here, the Human Podcast Machine, you heard a previous Taz Tales where I talked about the next day after my debut at the Garden in Philadelphia with the three of the main agents. I knew that... that they wanted to kind of revamp me a little. So I you know, when you are a former multi-time world champion and you have a lot of years in the business and you go somewhere and you get revamped, that's usually a tough time. So that's kind of what happened to me. You know, I don't think that that would have happened if Vince Russo was writing. That's all. I'm just saying, because it's like a football player. Okay, if a high school football player is this great player, and a lot of schools are recruiting him, and he's a running back, and a lot of schools are recruiting him. But, you know, all these top schools are recruiting him. But then, you know, USC wants him the most. The offensive coordinator and the running back coach for UFC, I'm sorry, for USC, is all over this kid and his parents, recruiting him for 5-6 months or whatever, and really recruits him, meaning watches him play a lot, and tells him what, yeah, hey, look, you're going to play as a freshman here. You got a good chance to start as a sophomore. You'll get on the field as a freshman, but you're probably going to start as a sophomore because of the landscape here with the running backs at USC. My point in telling you this is, that kid signs a letter of intent when he's a senior to go to that, to USC, and now he's locked in to be a USC Trojan. And now, right before the fall, when he's about to step on campus at USC, that offensive coordinator slash running back coach leaves and goes to Alabama or to University of Florida or Texas. That kid now is dealing with a coaching staff that didn't bring him in. This specific position coach brought him in. That's kind of what happened with me.
So basically, Eric Bischoff inadvertently, indirectly screwed you over by hiring Vince Russo. But
No, I can't blame Eric. No. I hear you. A lot of people want to blame Bischoff for a lot of stuff. I can't. I never had a problem with him, and I can't blame him for that. No, but I get the joke. I got you. No, you know, look, everything happens for a reason. I have no regrets. I'm very grateful for the folks at WWE for what they've done with me and my career and segued me and helped me become an announcer. I'm always going to appreciate that. Please, that's how I really feel. I just want to come out here with a segment like this, Taz Tales, and be real and be honest with not just fans of mine, but people that are fans of hearing a wrestler from my generation talk about the way it went down. Because I was fortunate enough to be in my prime during one of the hottest eras of the wrestling industry. You know, the late 90s into the early 2000s. So I was very fortunate of that. You know, so I could speak on that from true experience. But, you know, that was it. I was supposed to take over the Lion's Den, and me and Shamrock were going to knuckle it up and then move on to the Stone Cold One himself, Austin. But none of that happened. And here I am sitting with Seth doing Taz Tales.
Oh, yeah.
Until next week, I'm Taz, you're not.